Welcome to Entrepreneurs Unlimited with Mark Haney on KHDK Sports 1140 and HaneyBiz.com. Mark is a well-known local entrepreneur who has a passion for growing companies and uncovering the stories of other successful business people. Mark will share his and their experiences and hopes to ignite the entrepreneurial spirit within you. And now, here's Mark Haney.
Where will your story of success begin? Maybe I should say it. Where did your success story begin? Because some of you guys are already down that path, and some of us are maybe more at the beginning of our venture. But doesn't it all start at some point with just an idea? Just an idea. But my question is, what should we do when we have a great idea? I mean, so many times it's that idea that you just can't stop thinking about. But what should you do? Maybe we ought to give it a little bit of attention and see what happens. I am here with Marcus Haney and Tom Cisneros. How are you gentlemen doing this fine morning?
Fab.
Ready to play on a Saturday?
Absolutely. Yeah. Fired up. Missed last week, so excited to be back here on the air.
Yeah, good to be back. We're talking about great ideas. Some ideas are not as good as others. But when you have an idea and you can't shake it, Marcus, what do you do?
Yeah, Marcus, what do you do?
What time in the morning is it?
Yeah, exactly. I usually run it by family, friends, people that have some influence that I can share my idea with and see if I can't get some feedback on, where I can take it.
Yeah, you kind of socialize the idea a little bit, talk about it. Yeah, but I mean, do you get some good feedback or they shoot you down most of the time? How's that work?
Depending on who I'm talking to. If it's you, it's a lot of poke holes in it and figure it out.
Tom, I'm a yes if guy. Tom, what do you do when you have just a great idea?
I call a lawyer because generally it leads to incarceration, which is a great place, by the way, to meet
Tom,
great business contacts.
As entrepreneurs, you know, sometimes it's tough to sort the good ideas from the bad ideas. But I like your idea, Marcus, on, you know, who you spend your time with, because sometimes when you spend time with the right people, the creative people, it sort of can help your idea take life, catch flight a little bit.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I have some of those people in my life. And my wife gave me this. It's a little
Humpty
doll.
Dumpty?
It's an idea. Okay, there's a children's book called What Do You Do With an Idea by Kobe Yamada. And in the book, it talks about what you do. It's this child that comes up with an idea, and it's the story of what happens to that idea as it's given a little bit of attention. Huh. And it's a pretty interesting story. It's not just for kids. It can inspire anybody. So she gave me this because she thinks I'm kind of the idea guy. But in reality, we know she is the idea person, right? We did the 50 things this year.
Right.
50 things that she's never done because she turned 50. You know, we did some crazy stuff. But the one I think that leaps out the most is, going to Times Square and watching the ball drop. And then I'm hanging around Candace, my next door neighbor, also an idea guy, package one. He got the idea of let's go on this trip to Miami, right? So about 3 years ago, we planned this trip to go with the 49ers to go see them play the Dolphins,
the one that you just went to last week.
Yeah, well, it was just a trip in concept. Well, it ended up happening in reality last weekend. That's where I was with Candace last weekend, and it was a great trip. We had a great time, and, you know, ideas start generating. And one of the things, ironically, that we saw was Castro died Friday while we were there in Miami. And so Tom got the idea to go down to Little Havana, right? And let's go to the heart of what is happening in America as relates to Cuba. And so we went down, and it was a huge celebration, a ton of optimism, a ton of hope for the future, and just people with new ideas were starting to generate about what could happen and maybe democracy eventually for Cuba. But we went to the game, and we saw the Dolphins play the Niners. And the one thing that, people are calling me like Forrest Gump, because I'm in, how do you get, how do you how do you put yourself in these places where history is happening, right? We were at the Niner game when Cap took the knee for the first time. We were there. We talked about it on this show. And then we're at the Dolphins playing, you know, playing the Niners, and we're in a suite. It's a first-class trip. And we're watching, and when Cap takes a knee in the middle, you could just see the fan. You could almost see it. They didn't scream during the national anthem, but as soon as it was over and Cap took the field after the kickoff, I mean, he got the worst ovation wow. that you can imagine. And anyway, at the end of the game, he was stopped by this. He was happened to be wearing his Castro shirt, right? And then at the end of the game,
he's making friends, isn't he?
Yeah, he got booed pretty hard when he got crushed in the last play of the game. But anyway, today, you know, we got some ideas. We've got, you know, there's good ideas, there's bad ideas. One of the things that I noticed on the trip, it was a first-class trip, but you have people that don't get the idea about, you know, your space. People, you know how people kind of invade your space?
Yeah,
you know?
Not a big fan
of that. You're in line, and people, you know, if some woman's purse is poking you in the back, you might like this, Tom, but it's like you're little, there's like 2 feet of space when you're in line to get a beer, right?
Yeah. Is that your purse, or are you just happy to see me?
Or if you're speaking to somebody, we had the reception there, and you can tell what they had, you know, in the buffet line, maybe, you know, it's like, hey, we're a little bit too close. And, you know, I started thinking about those spaces and just where people get the idea to get so close. And, you know, like if you're in an ATM line, right, you need like 6 feet, right? And if you're at a urinal, right, you need like not
12.
Two feet. I kind of think that if you're in a line, a typical line, it's like 2 foot. But if you're, you know, reaching into your pants to get your valuables out, it's like 6 or 12 feet. It's got to be a little bit longer. A little bit more distance.
I see. There's a joke there. I'm just going to keep it to myself.
So later in the show, we will meet Sacramento's hottest new entrepreneur, Sherry Atwood. Sherry had an idea about solving the difficult way payments are exchanged in a marital divorce. She ran with that idea and turned it into a high-growth, scalable business venture called Support Pay.
Yeah, that's going to be cool. I'm
excited.
But after the break, we will meet the highly successful entrepreneur and iconic investor, Roger Akers. Roger has made a career out of sorting out the best ideas and helping those ideas to grow into ventures that change the world. Join the conversation on Facebook Live. This is Entrepreneurs Unlimited, broadcasting from Sports 1140, streaming live podcast and YouTube, HaneyBiz.com. Welcome back to Entrepreneurs Unlimited, presented by law firm Greenberg Traurig. I am joined today by the legendary entrepreneur and investor, Mr. Roger Akers, the founder of Akers Capital. Good morning, Roger.
Good morning. I'm so glad to be here.
I am happy you are here. I know that you are giving up an opportunity to go out and put some ducks in their final resting place.
Well, in my freezer.
In your freezer. So you're giving up duck hunting. You're on the show today. Let's tell America who you are. Who is Roger Akers? What, tell us a little bit about your background and your business.
Well, I sure will. Thanks for having me. It's an honor. Well, I started out selling fishing worms on the Fort Hall Indian Reservation up in Idaho as an entrepreneur.
How old were you?
Very young. But I had a parent's great work ethic, and from my parents learned a great work ethic working on a farm. And my dad worked a full-time job while we were being raised, and also ran the farm. And but he always wanted us to go to college and get a great college education. There was actually no question in the world that we weren't going to go to college.
Yes.
We were on our way. And so got a accounting degree, a computer science degree, a master's degree. And a good friend was headed out on in the world, and he said, let's move to Detroit, Michigan.
Oh, that sounds
fun. From Pocatello, Idaho, and work for a consulting firm out of Philadelphia. And so from there, had great successes and went from Detroit to Fairbanks, Alaska.
Nice.
To San Francisco and worked for Dianne Feinstein putting new computer systems in for Muni over there in the Bay Area.
I guess you needed that tech background a little bit.
And then we took that company public, and I made a few bucks and went and started my own company.
Nice.
During that period, I just as I was coming into that, I met my wife, the love of my life. We met in Europe with backpacks on our back in Zermatt, Switzerland, and riding a train up the hill. And it was just a great meeting, and we've been together now for 35 years.
Wow. Well, my wife and I have been together for 31 and a half almost. But, I mean, when we talked at lunch the other day, you said, I'm the luckiest man in the world. And normally I would argue with somebody about that. But, you know, it's like, hey, I was going to let Roger talk a little bit because I feel like I'm the luckiest man in the world. Why are you the luckiest man in the world?
You know, you can talk about money and assets and all that kind of thing, but that's just not the case. It's the family group that you have around you and the friends that you have around you. And I've got the best friends in Sacramento and around the country, and then just a wonderful, wonderful family.
Yeah,
I've got my two children. Both have master's degrees. One lives down in Newport Beach, living the life, of her life, and I've got a couple of grandkids. That makes it all worthwhile.
Yes.
And my son's a budding entrepreneur and on his way to Seattle to have a big success up there.
Isn't it so cool to have? Okay, you're a really successful guy. You've done a lot of stuff. We're going to get into that, but in this case, we went right personal, which is cool. But to have such successful, driven children, your children are about the same age as mine, but they're so mine are driven too. But isn't that cool to see what's happening with your children and how they just eat up life?
It is. The funny part is it's never been a question for them. They always kind of have just embraced it and have been very confident and able to go out there and really make things happen on their own right. My daughter, she makes everything look easy. And what she does is very, very hard.
Awesome. That's awesome. Okay, so let's talk
Maybe back a little bit on the history. So yeah. The reason I got to Sacramento and whatnot is I started an IT consulting services company with a partner, and over a 12-year period, we built that into a very, very large, for me anyway, a 480-person IT consulting services company, and that's why I get to horse around.
You took the one company public, and now you've got the other one that you built into 480 people, and then you sold that company?
We sold that in 95, 96, and that's why I get to horse around.
Now, horsing around for you is investments, right? So you help... You know what? You're helping the next guy in line is the way I look at it. Is a venture capital guy and an angel investor. You're helping the guys that have the best ideas that are coming around. Tell us about what that's like.
Well, number one, it's a very selfish endeavor because helping people and really being around the smartest people in the area is something that's pretty addictive.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been blessed with the fact that I get to hang out with a lot of very smart people. You always work with smarter people than you are,
yes,
is my goal.
Great advice.
But I've got to meet, many, many, many early stage entrepreneurs over the years, and maybe I've helped them a little bit along the way. But it's definitely a two-way street.
What's it like to see somebody, you meet them in their early stages, and then you had the success yourself, but when you see them and they blossom from maybe a startup into somebody with a cool exit, what's that like to know you were a part of that?
Well, it's just like having a baby. it really is. It's one of the greatest feelings that you can possibly have, of seeing somebody have a great success and somebody that's worked so very, very hard for that. And not just a person, but a team of people, the team that they're able to build and how they come together and the culture that they get that gets put in place in those kinds of businesses. You can see a successful company and contrast that against one that's not going to be successful, mm-hmm, just based on the team and the culture that gets put in place and the values that people are living on
early,
a day-to-day
basis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, Roger, for the people that don't know, you're a mountain of a man. I'm kind of a smaller guy, but you're a big guy. But you have this heart of gold, but you're so humble, right? You've had all this success, but you're humble. Now, where did that humility come from? I mean, did you have some setbacks? Did you have some times when you had some life lessons that needed to be learned?
Well, I've learned a lot of hard lessons along the way. Until you've lost your first $1 million, you really don't know.
That does sound painful.
You really don't know what a loss is necessarily. There's lots of different kinds of losses, but that certainly got my attention.
Okay, so you had a business and you lost.
A business that went defunct over in the Salt Lake area. It was just really not a very pleasant experience. And another one was one that probably bothered me worse is we sold a company to another company, and it was a great success for us. And we were almost through the non-compete period and all of those types of liability periods. And a month before that occurred, we got a letter, and it wasn't a letter. It was a FedEx about 8 inches thick, and it was a lawsuit because of a violation of patents.
Oh, goodness.
And that drug on cost $2.3 million in legal fees.
And drug on
over a four-year period. And it was just like a weight around your neck every single day.
Is there a lesson to be gleaned?
Well, it was. It's not to lose faith, because after that four-year period, a judge had all the lawyers in the room, and he said, "What the heck are those guys doing here?"
Okay.
And that was us and our lawyer. And he said, "Those guys shouldn't even be here. Get rid of them." And he threw us out, and the next day we had a settlement, and we got out from under that.
You went from this extremely stressful situation that's just, ugly.
To being free.
Freedom. And that's what this show is all about, is freedom. But the other thing that we have on this show that, I'm going to steal your, we have a lot of Markisms, right? Little catchphrases. And you were telling me a story story about how you developed a no jerks policy. Yeah. What happened with that? How did that happen?
Well, that's just one of my favorites.
I'm going to adopt that policy for the show as a Markism, just so you know. I'm stealing that.
You can have it. That'll be great. But, there's a great entrepreneur here in the Sacramento area. His name's Gary Sino.
Yeah.
And Gary built a great
clearance
center, and he also built a big real estate empire and lots of things. And, we were having some fun one night, and Gary asked me to go to lunch with him, and we went to lunch the next day, and he said, there's some people in this town that could really take advantage of you, and you shouldn't be taking advantage of. You're a good guy.
Oh, man.
And it was kind of not really a warning, but it was just a piece of advice.
Yeah,
right?
He was coaching coaching up Roger Akers.
Yeah, he was coaching me, and he said, what you need to do is adopt the no jerks policy.
Ah.
And he says, every time you have a jerk in your life, whatever it is and whatever it costs to get rid of them, do it. Cut them out, and you're going to find something amazing happens. And what that was is that it backfills with the greatest people on earth. And I'll tell you, if you knew the people that I have relationships with and the network I have and the people that I get to interact with, it's a great piece of advice. It sounds simple, but it's hard to do sometimes, but it's a wonderful thing to accomplish.
And you think about those people and the people that are helping the entrepreneurial community here in Sacramento, right? You are, you and I talked about Michelle Halston and how she is a great attorney who's helping people. But you are involved with other people that are really kind of like we are a little bit. They're adopting, this idea that Sacramento can be a great place to grow a business, and they're helping that community, and they're professionals.
Well,
more professional than I am, for sure.
Well, the fact of the matter is in Sacramento, we really don't have the largest pool of investment capital in the West. We don't have the largest qualified labor pool in the West. But I'll tell you what we do have. Besides just an affordable cost of living, I'm a little bit tired of that cliche. But we have great people and organizations that are really supporting a real entrepreneurial spirit in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. And I've never been more optimistic in my life about Sacramento and where it's headed right now. And I mean, if you look at the enthusiasm of people like Lokesh Sakaria, Moneta
Ventures. Yes, I love Lokesh.
And DCA Capital's Kurt Rock and Steve Mills, they're making earlier stage investments now, really top-notch people. Larry Kelly and his new initiative with Valley Extends, and Barry Broom with CSAC, and Duchenne Patek out at UC Davis, and what they're doing with Area 52 and the Davis Roots program.
I got to get that guy. Those other guys have all been on the show. Well, Steve Mills hasn't been on the show. He set Kurt Rock at his place. But, Kurt is more of the front guy. Steve's that behind the scenes. He's got a lot of the financial wisdom in his heart. We're going to have to get to our next break. But what you're talking about is – something we talk about on this show a lot, and it's the power of with, right? Alone as an entrepreneur, we can be great at maybe a product or one aspect of business. But when you surround yourself with the right people, when you have guys like Roger Akers on your team, when you have Steve Mills on your team, when you have Lokesh, I mean, come on, you have a lot better chance of coming away with a victory. We're going to have you stick around. We are going to go to break, but we're going to bring on a really cool story. We are going to bring on Sherry Atwood, the founder of Support Pay. It's now based in Sacramento, and it's the first ever automated child support system. Join the conversation on Facebook Live, and we will be back in just a minute. Haney. I'm Mark Haney, and today I am joined by Sherry Atwood, president and founder of Support Pay. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning.
Now, Roger was on the show earlier, and he was going to go duck hunting and gave it up for this show. Now, what would you be doing today, right now, if you weren't here with Mark Haney?
I'd be moving into my house.
Aww.
My movers are on their way right
That's
now.
That's awesome. So you're moving to Sacramento from the Bay Area.
Yes.
You're relocating Support Pay. Tell us about Support Pay and, you know, how you ended up deciding to move it to Sacramento or to grow it here in our region.
Yeah, I was looking at a bunch of different cities, Austin, Colorado, North Carolina, and Dave Sanders is one of my early investors. He said, what about Sacramento? And I was like, I don't know. And then he said, just come up here. Just come up here. So Barry and Dave said, come up.
Barry Broom.
Yes, and got me. The way they suckered me was they said, well, we're going to take you to a Kings game.
Oh,
and I'm a huge basketball football fan. So I said,
"Are you
all right,
more of a Kings fan or a Warriors fan?"
No, I'm a Warriors fan. That's the only thing. The only
I
thing bad.
That, I remembered that about you.
I can't see my Warrior games here. That's the
yeah.
only
well,
thing.
A couple times a year.
I know. So they got me up here and just showing. I was just amazed at everything that's going on here. We had no idea. My team came up here and they said absolutely they were ready to move.
Nice.
So 9 of them relocated from the Bay Area. We've been able to find amazing talent. I had just hired my CTO from here, Jyoti Das. I've been able to hire developers, and just the support in the whole area has been amazing.
So let's talk about the idea that you had when you decided to launch Support Pay, because you came from the corporate world.
Yep.
What happened? You just have an idea, or how did this thing take off?
Yeah, so I grew up as a child of divorce. My parents had a horrific divorce. So when I faced my own divorce now 12 years ago, my ex and I swore it would be amicable. So it was. I did the divorce myself. We went out. We had a drink to celebrate our divorce. I couldn't have gotten
any
better. Yeah. I'm a great ex-wife.
Yeah. Let me check. I'm going to listen to the rest of your story, and I'll see if I agree.
And so at the time, I was a vice president at Symantec, and I'm traveling the globe, executive to a single mom. And I realized that there's one thing in life you don't get a bill for, and that's child support.
Oh, yeah.
They're just expected to remember. And then every time we'd see each other when we were changing our daughter, it's like, hey, you owe me 50 for this.
Right.
Will you owe me 20 for that? Will you owe me 50 for this?
Oh, man. Yeah, you're always sorting out the little financial stuff.
And then it's like so frustrating. So I was like, well, there has to be an app for this.
Right.
And so this was, again, like 10, maybe 8 years ago. And I was not going to do a startup. I am the least likely. I'm a woman over the age of 30, single mom. I didn't have a tech undergrad degree. Like, I'm not an ideal entrepreneur from Silicon Valley. And I kept looking, and there was nothing out there. So finally, I think the final thing was made me look. I was just getting frustrated with corporate America and really wanted to just do something that made an impact in the world. I made money before. I grew up poor. I was fine going back there, but I just really wanted to see, can we make a difference? Can we end the financial conflicts between
parents? Interesting. Yeah. I mean, interesting that you grew up poor, and so you weren't as afraid as a lot of us who would be like, well, I don't want to go back and, be in that, sharing that apartment, but you're like that.
I knew none of that. Growing up poor and getting to the point of having so much money and having material things that you never thought you could. Once you get there, you realize that the money actually doesn't matter at all. Hmm. Right. And it matters what you're doing and who you're spending your time with.
Yeah.
And you can't pay for that.
Wow.
And so I'd rather be sitting in an apartment with you know, a mattress with amazing people around me than have my pocket full of money.
Yeah. And that's kind of what's happened when you moved here to Sacramento. You've
Absolutely.
Been with, you're right, you're just getting the house today. Mm-hmm. What have you been doing? How long have you been here now?
So I've been here 3 months.
3 months. Where yeah. have you been? I mean, what, have you been living on somebody's couch or what?
Yeah. I've lived in 7 places in,
oh,
in
you're kidding
6
me.
Weeks. Up to the point, Barry not only is an amazing CEO for the economic development, but he even housed us.
Barry Broom. Roommates with Barry Broom.
We were. Barry
wife.
And Beth, yeah, my daughter, me and my dog.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Live there, and we're in an apartment right now. And all the furniture we have is a king-size mattress and a garbage can. That is it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Barry Broom, Greater Sacramento, whatever it takes to recruit the best into Sacramento. You can even come live with Barry Broom if you need to. That's awesome. Okay, so I want to get back into the support pay a little bit.
Yep.
So it's a really cool app. It's solving this major problem of just people communicating. What kind of success have you seen in for your customers?
Yeah, so what the biggest thing is ending the financial conflict. We're also, parents are 90% more likely to exchange child support using our platform.
So is it more likely to have the is it more of a female problem or a male problem?
No, it's both. It's different. So it's the, you know, male, I'll say most of it, 87% of fathers are the paying ones.
Okay.
And their feedback is, I have no problem paying.
Yeah.
I just want to know the money's going to my kid.
Yeah.
Right? But they don't do the shopping. They don't sign them up for summer camp. They don't realize shoes are $150.
Right.
And so they say, just show me.
Yes.
And the moms are like, you know, I'm tired of having to nag, beg. I don't want any more money than I need to raise the kid. So now it eliminates all of the conflict. They don't have to communicate. You don't get an email or text message from your ex. You don't have to hear from your ex.
Because you want it to be positive.
Exactly.
The communication that you have with the ex, it's better if it's a lot more positive. If every time you see him, it's like, where's that $50? I mean, come on. How about talking about how great our kids are?
Exactly. And then plus you're not putting your kids in the middle.
Yeah.
You don't have to fight about any of this. And even myself, like the level of conflict has went from like 100 to 2.
Wow.
Right? Because I use the app myself.
Right.
But we don't, it never comes up. And it's amazing what happens when he gets the bill from support pay, then when he gets the bill from Sherry.
Yeah,
right?
It's just more automated. And thinking about that business, right, I can see why Dave Sanders might have invested in it, because if it helps one person, it can help, like, how many? How big? I mean, it's a lot, big market,
There's 55 million parents in the U.S. alone, and they exchange over $200 billion every year.
Wow.
In child support and child expenses. That's the U.S.
multiplied. How much is that again?
55 million parents exchanging over $200 billion in the U.S. alone.
Wow.
Globally, it's 300 million parents exchanging over $900 billion every year in child expenses.
Billions of dollars running through what could be running through your app.
Yep. And right now it's mostly cash and handing it back and forth between the parents.
Well, it's all documented this way. It's all clear. It's all above board. No stress. Now, what about how does a customer find out about an app like yours? Is that through the court system or how do you market it?
Yeah. So we go everything from direct online, child support, search for that as a term. You'll find us there. Or we're working with family law professionals. So we have about 20,000 so far family law professionals who are recommending our product to their client, because it actually makes their life easier as well.
Mm-hmm.
It gets them the data they need to take action on cases.
Yeah, I could see it putting some of those facilitators out of business, because no reason to bring in the special facilitation person if it's automated.
Oh, no. It actually helps them more.
Oh, it does.
Because there's still conflict on the app. We track it. We're not going to decide the conflict. They have to go back, but they need the history of the data to make a decision.
It just makes it a lot more clear.
Yeah, so then they get a printout. They can make a decision rather than trying to dig it out at each parent.
Interesting.
So
this is a very useful tool. There's so many people that could use this. Obviously, extremely scalable. But let's talk about your team. You touched on this at the beginning. You brought in some people from Sacramento. You brought a couple people here. And I went over to your office, and you're kind of getting it set up. You're still at that beginning stage. But you had a place where you could take a nap. What's that all about? I don't know if Roger and I talked about that a little bit when we were talking. He's like, anyway, I'll let you tell us what's the sleeping situation over at the at support pay.
Well, so right now it's not great because my requirements are that everybody at the company takes a 45-minute nap in the
afternoon.
It's a requirement. That is a requirement. And you don't
better
have to sleep.
Be working hard enough where you be, need a nap.
Exactly. So we're in the middle of construction. So our new facility will have 4 dedicated nap rooms with high bed and a low bed, depending on which one you want to get in.
Now, I would think that you might have, do you have HR? That's written into the policies that you have to do that. Now, I could assume that there might be problems that could create as well.
No, they could just take a break.
Okay.
How about that? They could take a break.
Okay.
But they have to do. But right now, my nap room is a beanbag, and it's right next to our conference table, and they keep having these meetings in the middle of my nap, so it's not being very effective.
Yeah.
So I need to get this construction done quickly.
Yeah. Well, I will put in a plug right now for Kim Silver's HR, who is an HR consultant, has a very affordable program there that might be a help for you guys, just to get the policies written out. She's great. Anyway, she's a sponsor and a great friend. But and she's a Kings fan, so we would think.
I mean, Kings are okay as long as they're not playing the Warriors.
Very true. Okay. So let's talk about your vision for this. Okay, so where do you see it? Obviously, you're here in Sacramento. You'd be, in many cases, considered a startup, although you're already rocking. Mm-hmm. Where do you see this thing going?
So there's two places. One, in the U.S. alone, we spend $6 billion every year to build and maintain child support systems for the states.
Okay.
Every state has their own system. They're all, on average, 15 years or older. Our platform meets all of the requirements and can get states up and running immediately, help caseworkers, help parents who have child support cases. So that's the one thing, is helping one save us money. In the U.S. or in California, we spent $1.2 billion on our system. We spend $786 million a year on maintenance. Mm. Imagine what would happen if we could take a quarter of that and put it to public education.
Yeah.
Right? So it being more efficient, saving us, and putting those dollars where it really matters. So moving into the state government. And then the ultimate vision for the company, the actual company name is called ITAVI,
okay,
which is an acronym for It Takes a Village.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes.
The power of WIF.
The power. Exactly. And so there, the vision is to help families with their financial conflicts. So today it's parents living apart. Tomorrow it is siblings paying for their parents.
Wow.
Sharing bills. So anytime parents have to share money. Or
very cool. And I have seen nightmares in that as well, which I will not get into. When we come back, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're bringing Roger back on. We're going to talk to Sherry and Roger about what it's really like to raise money and what it's really like to sort out what the best ideas are, who the best people are to invest into. When we come back, join the conversation on Facebook Live. This is Entrepreneurs Unlimited, broadcasting from Sports 1140, streaming live, podcast, and YouTube, HaneyBiz.com. Welcome back to Entrepreneurs Unlimited, presented by law firm Greenberg Traurig. And I am joined today by both Sherry Atwood and Roger Akers, and we're going to talk about the process of turning an idea into a fundable business opportunity, something that is actually a good enough idea where somebody wants to invest into your company. Now, Sherry, you just had that happen. Roger, you've done that like, what, 1,000 times?
Oh, well, maybe not 1,000, but plenty.
All right, so let's get some real world talk here. Now, tell us about how you, what happened when you first raised the money, Sherry. Were you scared? Were you excited? What was that feeling?
No, I was absolutely scared. I mean, when I go and tell people what we do, especially in Silicon Valley, they're like, you do what?
Yeah.
Like, you're not another dog walking service or food delivery service. I started raising 2 years ago, it's been. And what ultimately, and I would say my biggest feedback is, if you get one or two big hitters, or like I say, the five men that run Silicon Valley, get one of them. I end up getting two, Tim Draper and Mark Benioff from Salesforce. But once you get them, everybody wanted
in. Okay.
Prior to that, it was incredibly difficult.
So sometimes, and is that kind of the experience you've seen too, Roger, where you've seen, hey, a couple of guys say, I'm in, and Roger's in, I'm in, shoot, what the heck, right?
Well, people do follow, that's for sure. When you make an investment and give a company a real chance to go out and execute, you find other people say, well, you know, they have a better than average chance of making it. And selling, their ability to sell you on that and to make that work is... a real testament to their fortitude.
Now, I'm assuming that you see, I think you gave me a statistic, Roger, about how many business plans you've seen in your career, and you see so many, but you can only invest in so few.
That's exactly right.
How do you sort out the good from the great?
Well, we've seen over 10,000 plans since we started.
That's true story. That's a lot of reading.
And you have to have real discipline in terms of what your criteria for investing is, and it's not ad hoc. Although, I would also tell you that here in the Sacramento area, you have to be opportunistic in the things that you invest in. You can't be strategic in one industrial sector or not. You have to be opportunistic. And that's one of the keys to Sacramento that people, as investors, really have to embrace. Otherwise, they'll not be as happy.
Yeah, we have a cool mix. Now, Sherry, is it like Shark Tank when you have to go pitch to somebody?
And worse. It is worse. And you hear everything. I think I have probably, I counted it up the other day, 331 different people that I have pitched to raise money. We've raised $3.2 million in seed funds, and then we're just about to close a $4.1 million Series A.
Congratulations.
Yeah, we're like days away from closing that deal.
That's great.
But yeah, over 300 different investors I've had to pitch.
And how is that? Obviously, you need the investment, but every time you get a new round of investment, people become diluted, right? You have a little bit less ownership.
Yep.
How do you wrestle with that quandary?
Well, for me personally, the number one thing is I'm not doing this for the money.
Okay.
So I don't care how much dilution I get. I care more about if my employees are getting diluted too much, but it's a concern. The other big part of it is it's a very big distraction to your business. So for the past 9 months trying to do Series A, I can't focus on my business.
Right.
I have to focus on fundraising.
And now is that, Roger, from what you've seen, okay, if a business is growing, is the CEO or the CFO continually having to raise money in a growing business?
Well, it just depends on what the plan is. Obviously, every business is different, as we all know. But at the same time, you never want to take a dollar you don't need.
Okay.
And there are people that have done that in the past, and actually it's been a detriment to them, not only from a dilution perspective, but they get off focus of what it is they're really trying to execute on, and it becomes a huge problem.
Right. It's more about making a profit than just raising them. You can raise all the money in the world, but until you start having, I'm assuming your profitability is in the middle of your goal set,
absolutely.
Sherry?
And I think that my biggest lesson is I didn't focus on revenue because I knew we were going to get revenue. I wanted to get customers. We have over 40,000 parents on the platform, but because we were focused on growing the customer base and not revenue, we became dependent on venture funding.
Okay, so you proved your model through giving it away,
you're
starting to charge for
it. And now we're charging, but because of that, now I'm dependent on it, where if I look back, if I could have redone it, I would have focused on revenue, and then I could take the money if I wanted it, but I wouldn't have to take it.
You also have to realize that it created an investment opportunity for other people, and you've got business partners. Hopefully, you've got smart money there. I know you've got smart money with Lokesh and the guys at Moneta.
Yep.
I'm an investor, so I'm pretty happy about that.
Great.
But at the same time, it's a fact of life that not everybody gets born into a family with $30 million.
Yeah.
You've got to have a situation where you don't have the money, but you have the idea, you have the will, you have the brains to go out and really execute, and having people come alongside you and help you do that.
Yeah.
By the way, you do care about that dilution, just so you know.
Only from a control perspective.
It always matters in some form. And talking about two people here who really understand what this is all about, what building a business is all about, people who are in the middle of doing it right now, people who have done it many, many times. And what I love about it is we're all working together for Sacramento, my hometown. I love that. So I appreciate you two coming on the show today, helping hopefully inspire some entrepreneurship in our community. I want to do a special thanks to my buddy Brian Bennett, co-founder of Paul Martin's Restaurant. Great place to eat, one of my favorite restaurants. And a lot of people want more Mark Haney, right? Some of you guys don't want more Mark Haney. right, Tom? Right?
We
have some people back
Give
there.
Me some more
do
more
not, we want
more.
Want,
we want more.
More. But I will be out at Paul Martin's, okay, hanging out with Brian Bennett, my buddy. And Brian is doing a buffet, a toy drive, and out of Paul Martin's in Roseville on Eureka Road. And we're working with the Wounded Warriors and Placer County Fire, and we're going to try to do some good things for our community. So thanks, Brian, for that.
What day are you doing that?
We're doing that. Thank you. Thank you, Coach. Sunday, 1 to 4, Paul Martin's awesome. Be there. Brian Bennett now loves you, Sherry. so do I. So, shout out to Murad and Derek over at SST. I think Roger knows those guys, Sun Systems Technology. Those guys are going crazy, happy with how you guys are doing, going national, guys. And also, congrats to my buddy Jason Cardinay of Galena LLP, largest accounting firm in the area, in the Sacramento area. And they just started merging with a national company, CLA. So I'm really good for those guys, and don't want to miss next week's show. Gordon Fowler, CEO of Threefold, and Robert Lenny, the founder of the fast-growing Gutter Glove, will be joining us. And when we return, I will share some closing thoughts on what I do when I get an idea. If it's a lot of times it's not a good idea, but if it is a good idea, I kind of have a special way that I deal with that. This is Entrepreneurs Unlimited on Facebook Live, broadcasting from Sports 1140, streaming live podcast and YouTube, HaneyBiz.com. Welcome back. And, you know, today's show, I had a great time on today's show. Our guests were awesome. We're talking about what you do with an idea. And so many times we have these ideas and maybe we do nothing with them. And other times maybe we jump in too fast. Sometimes we're collecting data. I've seen it all, but I think if we give our idea, if it's a great idea, you give it a little bit of attention, that helps us build confidence, right? And that confidence can lead to really having this become a dream. And ultimately, the hope is, I mean, if it's a good enough idea, you can ultimately commit to it. But I think I'm back here with Marcus Haney, Tom Cisneros, two guys with a ton of ideas, ton of energy. Guys, what takeaways from today's show, I mean, about how to treat an idea?
I like what Sherry's idea about the 45-minute nap. What's can we incorporate that over at
that
the
is extremely creative? And we'll see how that plays out. But yeah, that's a culture thing. Which I mean, you got in that high tech industry, you got to have a great culture.
Absolutely, right? I think it's a big difference.
Are there sleeping pods involved in that?
I'm gonna have to go check it out at some point.
It
I'm
is
gonna see
cool.
What's going on
yeah.
She's nodding yes. There
oh,
are
perfect.
Sleeping pods for two.
but having a guy like Roger Akers, I mean, that guy is an absolute stud. Love having him on here and talking about what it takes to be an entrepreneur and, you know, play in the realm that he is.
But you guys have ideas. I mean, you keep an idea. If you wake up in the middle of the night and you're, you know, you just gotta, you write it down, you type it into your Evernote. I mean, how do you deal with it when you have a great idea? Because so many times, you know, if you're one of these people that has a lot of ideas, you forget the, especially at my age, you forget the ideas. That happens to me all the time.
We're the same age. I feel
you. You don't forget ideas, Tom.
Oh, good Lord. You know, and I know that you're aware that I have a couple ideas that I'm currently working on. If there's anything I've learned today, it's, you know, pull the trigger on one of these darn things and make the commitment, do it. You got to hang yourself out there and take a chance. You know, her idea is brilliant. I mean, I was kind of standing over there with Brian while I'm listening to her talk about this thing. It is absolutely brilliant, and it's something that I think is just going to catch on like wildfire. I'm really, really excited.
It is, and I think there's sometimes when we have these ideas, and I hear this all the time. I got this idea, but I'm kind of researching it. I'm gathering data, right? And then other people maybe don't wait around and do all this research and gather data, but a lot of us spend a ton of time doing research and gathering data, and it's almost like a stalling technique, where in today's society, I mean, things change so fast. If you're gathering data, that's about something that happened. I mean, even if you're gathering data about last week, it's already outdated by the time you could execute. So things are happening so fast that, you know, relying on all this data, relying on all this research, I mean, I would rather see us rely on theory, right? I'd rather see us rely on what we know. We all have theories about, I mean, Roger Akers today, right? He talked about his theory, his no jerks policy, right? That is a proven theory,
awesome.
Right? I mean, it's kind of basic, but keep those people out of your life and you're going to have a little more success. You're going to be a little bit more happy. So I think, you know, I've got some theories, right? The power of with. Yes, if you do enough of the little things, right? We have theories that we know we believe in with everything that we have. why not rely on hard work will not hurt you, right?
Absolutely.
There are theories that are proven that you can rely on, and maybe we ought to be thinking about those when we're starting a business a little more than the things that are going to be outdated by the time we even launch the business. So anyway, I like to write it down and revisit. That's my motto. I write it down. I type it into my phone. I write it down, and I revisit it. I don't have my wallet in here, but if pull it out, it will have my business cards with my goals. And you know what? Those goals mean something to me. My mission statement means something to me. And really, it's about, at some point, we talked about this a little bit, if you start getting some confidence, it becomes more of a dream or a vision. Maybe you write it down at that point, and you look at it, you write it down, you revisit it. At some point, it becomes a commitment, right? And we had, in my old world, we had our core values on the wall, and we talked about this a number of times, but the top core value on there was commitment for a reason. We actually modified the order in which our core values were because commitment, in my mind, is more important than anything else that you can stack up. It's about commitment. And I don't know, I think at some point in time when you really commit to something, right? You don't have to even look at it anymore. You just know it, right? When you give those ideas some attention, you see them grow, you start making real commitments to them. You live for those commitments, right? Right, and I think Marcus knows that, right? You didn't have to go look at a book when you're in Afghanistan to know what your commitment was, right? You had something that your job was to do, and you were living for that commitment. I live for my commitments, and I hold on to those commitments. I live for my family. I have a 100-year plan for my family. It might sound kind of ridiculous to some people, but our family wants to help people. You know, and we are living for that. We don't have to go look at some mission statement to know that we are trying to help people in this community. We're trying to help the entrepreneurs in this town. We're trying to help our business partners. I live for my friends, right? I live to help create millionaire business partners. That's part of my things. I can help some people to change their life, man. That's a commitment that I live by. It's not an ordinary write it down and revisit. Sounds good for a little bit. I'm committed to that, and I'm living for this town we live in. You guys, I mean, I see what Barry Broom is doing. He's having people spend the night at his house. Right. You know, bring it. Part of my recruitment plan is you can come over and spend the night. You know what? He is living for. He's made a commitment to grow Sacramento. I am. You know what? I grew up here. This is my hometown. My family is here. My grandkids are here. And I am committed to doing what I can to help this Sacramento area, to help this town. And I will not downsize my dreams. I am not going to downsize this. We are going to do this. It is about the power of with. It is about the village that Sherry talked about. We can do this together. If we don't get down our own little silos 100% of the time, if it's not always about the money, right? The money, as Roger indicated, hey, sometimes that's a piece of it. But you know what? Isn't it just about doing the right thing? And you know what? There's no more powerful force on this planet than when the human soul is on fire. And there is no more magical feeling that you can get than when you feel when a dream is in the process of coming true. Never above you. Never below you.
Always by your side.
Amen. Get the rockets ready.